NASCAR on Prime lights up Music City. Who's got what it takes to tackle the concrete at Nashville Super Speedway and walk away with NASCAR's coolest trophy? Stream the NASCAR Cup Series at Nashville, Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, where music meets motorsports, only on Prime.
Memorial Day deals are here at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances, including Samsung. Plus, save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more, like the Samsung Bespoke French Door Refrigerator featuring Beverage Center and Dual Ice Maker. Shop at Lowe's today. We help you save. Valid 5/15 through 6/18. Selection varies by location. Total savings varies based on purchase amount. See Lowe's.com for details.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Hi, I'm Tara Schmidt, a registered dietitian and host of On Nutrition, a podcast for Mayo Clinic where we dig into the latest nutrition trends and research to help you understand what's health and what's hype. There's a lot of wild stuff out there, so we'll be keeping it science-based, research-informed, and practical. Mayo Clinic's On Nutrition, new episodes every other week, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'd been on a mission to create a proper study space for my older son. He just started middle school and his workload was piling up. I figured a dedicated area with a desk and chair would help him stay organized and focused. Between juggling work deadlines and managing the chaos of two kids, finding affordable furniture that fit my budget felt like an uphill battle. That's when I turned to Facebook Marketplace. I'd used it before for smaller purchases, and while I'd heard some unsettling stories, I never imagined I'd end up living one myself. Scrolling through listings late one evening, I came across a beautiful oak desk. It had that classic charm I was looking for, and the price was ridiculously low. The seller, a man named Todd, messaged me promptly after I inquired. He seemed normal, polite, straightforward, and quick to respond. He explained that the desk was in a storage unit because he was downsizing and couldn't fit it in his new apartment. Would tomorrow morning work? He asked. I paused for a moment. The idea of meeting someone at a storage unit felt a little off, but his listing had photos and his profile seemed legitimate. Plus, I really wanted that desk. I ignored the voice in my head and agreed to it. The next morning, I pulled into the nearly empty lot of a storage facility on the outskirts of town. Rows of identical units stretched in both directions, the corrugated metal doors glinting under the pale winter sun. A single security camera perched above the gate, but there was no one else around except for a maintenance worker in the distance. Todd arrived a few minutes later in an old blue pickup truck. He stepped out, wearing a baseball cap and a flannel shirt. He greeted me, and I tried not to overthink it. People aren't always friendly in the morning, I told myself. The desk's in here, he said, gesturing to a unit about halfway down the row. He unlocked the padlock and slid the door up, revealing a dimly lit space packed with random furniture, boxes, and tools. Looks like it's in good shape, I said, peering in. Mind if I take a closer look? Of course, he said. Come on in. It's in the back. I paused at the threshold. Something about stepping into the dark, cramped space gave me the creeps, but I chose to ignore it. After all, he was standing there, holding the door open for me. What was I going to do? Back out now and look paranoid? Inside, the air smelled stale, a mix of dust and old wood. The desk was tucked behind a stack of chairs. It's in great condition, Todd said, stepping past me to move a few things out of the way. He was right. The desk was beautiful. The dark oak was polished and free of scratches, and the drawers slid open smoothly. I was just about to tell him I'd take it when I heard the metal door slide shut behind me. The sound echoed in the confined space, and my whole body tensed up. I turned to see Todd casually snapping the padlock back into place. It's just so no one disturbs us, he said with a grin that felt anything but reassuring. Every part of me was on high alert. I forced a smile and stepped back, trying to create some space between us. You know, I should check if the desk will fit in my car. My husband's waiting outside, and he's better at judging these things. Todd's expression flickered, his grin faltering for just a second before returning. Oh, I'm sure it'll fit, he said, but I didn't see anyone in your car when I pulled up. Are you sure he's out there? The blood drained from my face. I couldn't believe he'd been watching that closely. Yeah, I lied, keeping my voice steady. He's probably just walking around. He hates sitting in the car. Todd's eyes narrowed slightly and he crossed his arms. You seem a little nervous. Everything okay? Perfectly fine, I said, forcing a laugh. I just get claustrophobic in places like this. Let's go outside so I can check the desk dimensions. Todd didn't move right away. He stood there, staring at me with an intensity that made my palms sweat. Finally, he shrugged and pulled the padlock key from his pocket. Sure, he said, unlocking the door with deliberate slowness. The second the door rolled open, I bolted for my car. I didn't care how it looked. I needed to get out of there. Todd called after me, his voice demanding, but I didn't turn around. Once I was safely in my car with the doors locked, I grabbed my phone and called the police. Todd walked to his truck, his movements calm and unhurried, as if he hadn't just cornered me in a storage unit. He drove off before the officers arrived, leaving me shaken and questioning everything that had just happened. The police took my statement and inspected the storage unit, but there wasn't much they could do. Todd hadn't technically done anything illegal, though they agreed his behavior was suspicious. Next time, meet in a public place, one of the officers advised, and never go into an enclosed space with someone you don't know. I felt stupid for letting myself get into such a vulnerable position, but I also felt angry. Angry at Todd for making me feel unsafe and angry at myself for ignoring my instincts. Luckily for me, I was able to think quickly and came up with the lie about my husband. I don't know what would have happened if I hadn't said that. For weeks, I couldn't shake the memory of his grin or the way he'd questioned me about being alone. I stopped using Facebook Marketplace altogether, unwilling to risk another encounter like that. Looking back, I realize how lucky I was to get out of that storage unit unharmed. It's a lesson I'll never forget. No matter how harmless someone seems, you can never be too careful, especially when you're alone.
NASCAR on Prime lights up Music City. Who's got what it takes to tackle the concrete at Nashville Super Speedway and walk away with NASCAR's coolest trophy? Stream the NASCAR Cup Series at Nashville, Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, where music meets motorsports, only on Prime.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
I've been a carpenter for more than 10 years, so I've accumulated my fair share of tools, some of which I don't even use anymore. That's why I decided to post a few for trade on Facebook Marketplace. It's not that I couldn't sell them outright, but sometimes trades just feel simpler. Plus, I'd been looking for a decent lawnmower since my old one finally gave out. When a guy named Rick messaged me about trading his lawnmower for my high-end power drill, it seemed perfect. The pictures he sent showed a mower that looked almost brand new, way better than anything I'd have bought for the drill's resale price. Rick seemed friendly in his messages, and we quickly settled on a trade. He suggested I come to his house to finalize the deal, saying it'd be easier to show me how the lawnmower worked in person. It sounded reasonable at the time, so I agreed. He gave me an address that was about 25 minutes from my house, in a neighborhood I didn't know well, but didn't have any bad reputation either. I figured, what's the worst that could happen? That Saturday afternoon, I packed up the power drill and a few extra bits in case he wanted them, loaded them into my truck, and drove to the address Rick provided. The neighborhood seemed quiet enough, older homes, a few kids playing in yards, and plenty of parked cars. Nothing felt off until I actually pulled up to Rick's house. The lawn wasn't as neat as the others on the street, and there was an old sedan parked awkwardly in the driveway. The house itself was in decent shape, but the blinds were drawn on every window, and the porch light was on even though it was broad daylight. Still, I didn't think much of it. People are quirky, right? Rick came out as soon as I parked. He looked like his profile picture, a middle-aged guy with a scruffy beard. He waved casually and motioned for me to park closer to the driveway. I didn't pull in completely, which turned out to be a good decision. "Hey, thanks for coming by," Rick said, his voice friendly. "The mower's out back. You want to check it out?" "Sure thing," I said, grabbing the drill from my passenger seat. Rick led me around the side of the house to the backyard, where the lawnmower was sitting on a patch of dirt. It did look like the one from the pictures, clean, shiny, and in good condition. Rick knelt down and started explaining how the mower worked, pulling the starter cord to show me it was functional. He even let me try it out on a small patch of grass. I was just about to finalize the trade when I heard the sound of another car pulling up. I turned to see an older truck parking at the end of the driveway, effectively blocking my truck in. A man I didn't recognize stepped out. He was taller and bulkier than Rick, wearing a dirty tank top and jeans. Rick looked at him, then back at me, his smile suddenly less friendly. "Oh, that's my buddy Pete," he said, almost too casually. Pete didn't say anything. He just leaned against his truck, arms crossed, watching us. I felt a flicker of unease. Why was Rick's buddy here for a simple trade? "So," Rick said, his tone shifting, "about the lawnmower, how much is it worth, you think? Like, in cash?" It retails for about $400 new, but we agreed on the trade, remember?" Rick scratched the back of his neck, looking a little too innocent. "Yeah, but Pete and I were talking, and we figured it'd be better if you just gave us the drill and throw in, say, $200 cash. That work for you?" My stomach tightened. "I don't have that kind of cash on me," I said firmly. We agreed on the trade, and I brought the drill for the mower. Pete pushed off his truck and took a step closer. "You sure about that, man? You've got a nice truck there. Bet there's a wallet in it." That's when it hit me. This wasn't about the trade at all. It was a setup. I looked at my truck, blocked in by Pete's, and tried to think fast. If these guys wanted my money, or worse, I needed to get out of there now. "Tell you what," I said, forcing a smile. "Let me check my truck. I think I might have some cash in there." Rick and Pete exchanged a look, then nodded. I turned and started walking back toward the front yard, almost running. When I reached the truck, I didn't hesitate. I jumped in, slammed the door, and hit the lock button. Rick and Pete must have realized what was happening because they both bolted toward me. Pete was closer, but I didn't give him a chance. I threw the truck into drive, the tires spinning as I drove onto the grass. Pete pounded on the side of the truck, yelling something I couldn't hear over the roar of the engine. I didn't care. I jerked the wheel, swung the truck onto the street, and floored it. My heart was racing, but I didn't stop until I was several blocks away. When I felt safe enough, I pulled into a Walmart parking lot and called the police. The dispatcher was calm and professional, taking down all the details: Rick's address, a description of both men, and what had happened. She assured me an officer would check it out. A few days later, I got a call from the police. They had gone to Rick's house and found him there. When they questioned him, Rick claimed I had changed my mind and backed out of the trade, trying to paint himself as the reasonable one in the situation. But the officers weren't buying it. Turns out, Rick had already been flagged in several other reports involving shady Facebook Marketplace deals. He had a pattern of luring people to his property under the guise of trades or sales, only for things to take a suspicious turn. This wasn't just some misunderstanding or awkward negotiation gone wrong. Rick had been targeting people, and I'd come dangerously close to becoming another victim. While it felt good to know the police were onto him, I couldn't shake the thought of how bad things could have gone if I hadn't acted quickly. Now, I'm a lot more cautious when it comes to Facebook Marketplace. I never meet at someone's house, and I always bring a friend if the trade can't happen in a public place. That lawnmower deal could have cost me more than a few hundred bucks. It could have cost me my safety. And that's a lesson I'll never forget. From time to time, I like decluttering and getting rid of stuff I don't need. My home office was crammed with bookshelves, filing cabinets, and all sorts of furniture that no longer sparked joy. So I decided it was time to let go of an old wooden bookshelf that had been gathering dust. It wasn't anything fancy, just a sturdy secondhand piece I'd picked up years ago. Facebook Marketplace seemed like the quickest way to get rid of it. So I snapped a few photos, wrote a simple description, and posted it. Within a few hours, I got a message. The man, Kevin, seemed polite enough, asking if the bookshelf was still available and if he could pick it up later that evening. His profile photo showed a middle-aged man with glasses, smiling warmly. He seemed harmless, and since I'd never had a bad experience selling things online, I gave him my address. He arrived right on time. Kevin drove up in an older pickup truck and parked in my driveway. He seemed friendly, chatting about how he was redecorating his study and how the bookshelf would be perfect for his growing collection of novels. I helped him load the piece into his truck, and he thanked me profusely before driving off. It felt like a simple transaction, but I was wrong. A week later, I was in my living room folding laundry when I noticed a familiar truck slow down as it passed my house. It wasn't uncommon for people to drive slowly on our street. Kids often played outside and neighbors walked their dogs, but something about the way the truck lingered caught my attention. It was Kevin's truck. He didn't stop though, just kept driving, and I brushed it off as a coincidence. Maybe he lived nearby, I thought. But over the next couple of days, I started noticing that same truck more often. It would pass by in the morning when I was getting ready for work, and again in the evening as I watered my plants. It seemed intentional, but I tried to convince myself otherwise. It was a Friday evening when things escalated. I'd just finished dinner and was settling onto the couch with a book when I heard a knock at the door. I wasn't expecting anyone, so I hesitated before walking over. Peeking through the peephole, my stomach twisted. It was Kevin. I opened the door just a crack, enough to see his face, but not enough for him to push his way in if he tried. "Hi, Kevin. What can I do for you?" I asked, keeping my voice neutral. He smiled, but his eyes stayed cold. "I was just in the neighborhood," he said. "Thought I'd stop by. That bookshelf I got from you, it's great. I was wondering if you had any other furniture you're selling." His words were light, but there was an underlying tension in his tone that I didn't like. "No, I don't have anything else," I replied quickly. "Just the bookshelf. Glad you like it, though." He didn't leave. Instead, his smile faded and his expression hardened. "Come on," he said, leaning slightly against the door frame. "You've got a big house. You must have more stuff you don't need." My heart started pounding. "I really don't," I said, my voice firmer now. "I'm sorry, Kevin, but I'm not selling anything else." For a moment, he just stared at me. Then, without a word, he turned and walked back to his truck. I locked the door the second it closed and stood there, trying to figure out exactly what had just happened. Why had he come back? And why did it feel like this wasn't the end of it? The next morning, I woke up to find Kevin's truck parked across the street. He wasn't in it, or at least I didn't see him, but the sight of it brought on a wave of anxiety that settled in my chest. I decided to go about my day, hoping he'd leave, but the truck stayed there for hours. That evening, as I was cleaning up after dinner, I heard a loud knock at the door. My stomach tightened. Not again. This time, Kevin wasn't polite. He was banging on the door, yelling something I couldn't quite make out. "Open up," he shouted. "I know you're in there." I grabbed my phone and backed away from the door, dialing 911 as quickly as I could. As I explained the situation to the operator, Kevin's tone grew more aggressive. He was demanding to see more furniture, insisting that I must be hiding something valuable inside. "I'm calling the police," I shouted through the door, pretending to be braver than I was. "You need to leave." There was a pause, and then I heard him mutter something before stomping back to his truck, but he didn't drive away. He just sat there, engine running, as I waited for the police to arrive. The officers showed up about 10 minutes later, and by then, Kevin was still parked outside. They approached his truck and spoke with him briefly before escorting him away. One of the officers came to my door to take my statement. "Do you know this man?" the officer asked. "I sold him a bookshelf on Facebook Marketplace about a week ago," I explained. "He seemed fine at the time, but now he's been showing up uninvited and acting aggressively." The officer nodded, jotting down notes. "We'll file a report and issue a trespassing warning. If he comes back, call us immediately." Even though Kevin was gone, I didn't feel safe. I spent the rest of the night triple-checking the locks and curtains. Over the next few days, I couldn't relax. Every time I heard a car drive by, my chest tightened. Then, two nights later, he came back. This time, Kevin was visibly drunk. The sound of his truck screeching to a stop echoed in front of my house, and he stumbled out, yelling incoherently and banging on my front door. I could barely make out what he was saying, but it sounded like more demands to let him in and accusations about the things he claimed I still owed him. The way he moved was erratic, his voice slurring with every word. My hands trembled as I called the police again, struggling to keep the tremor out of my voice. He was so out of control that he didn't even notice when the police arrived. Two patrol cars pulled up silently, and officers quickly approached him. It wasn't until they grabbed his arms and began to restrain him that he even seemed to register what was happening. He started shouting and resisting, but he was no match for the officers. They cuffed him and led him away, his angry voice fading as they put him in the back of the patrol car. One of the officers came to my door again to let me know he had been arrested. "We're taking him in for trespassing and disorderly conduct," he said. "It's clear he's intoxicated, and we'll make sure he stays in custody for the night. If you want to press charges, we'll support that." I thanked the officer, but even with Kevin gone, my nerves were shot. I spent the rest of the night wide awake, pacing the house. I couldn't stop thinking about what might have happened if the police hadn't shown up so fast, or if Kevin had managed to break in. The thought kept me up for hours. Reflecting on it, I realize how reckless it was to give a stranger my home address. It's easy to think nothing bad will happen, until it does. I've since started using public meetup spots for any online sales, and I'll never make the mistake of letting someone pick up an item from my home again. That bookshelf was just an old piece of furniture to me, but to Kevin, it was a way in, a way to invade my space and disrupt my sense of safety. And while the police assured me he wouldn't be back, I still look out the window whenever I hear a knock at the door, just to be sure. I've always been a sucker for a good deal. After surviving countless late-night marathons and binging TV shows, my flat screen finally threw in the towel. Naturally, I turned to Facebook Marketplace to score a replacement. It's where I'd found my gaming chair, my desk, even the quirky neon lamp in my living room. So when I saw a 60-inch smart TV for just $200, I didn't hesitate to send a message. The seller's name was Tommy. His profile picture was of a smiling guy holding a dog, and his description of the TV seemed legit. Lightly used, works perfectly, just upgrading to a bigger screen. He replied quickly, confirming the TV was still available and offering to meet the next day. "Can I come to your place to pick it up?" I asked, figuring it'd be easier than trying to meet in some random parking lot. "Sure," he replied, sending an address. "Come by around 5 p.m. The next day, I punched the address into my GPS and headed out. The area was about 20 minutes from my apartment, a mix of older suburban homes and commercial lots. As I turned onto the street, I started to notice something strange. Many of the houses were run down, with boarded up windows and overgrown lawns. The address Tommy had given me led to one of the most dilapidated ones on the block. The house looked abandoned. Plywood covered the windows, and the front yard was littered with debris. Old tires, broken furniture, and weeds tall enough to brush against my knees if I walked through them. I slowed down, squinting at the house number painted crookedly on the mailbox. "This can't be right," I muttered. But it matched the address he'd sent. I pulled over to the curb, leaving my car idling. My first instinct was to drive off, but I told myself not to judge too quickly. Maybe Tommy was renting the place and just hadn't gotten around to fixing it up. Still, I couldn't shake the unease creeping up my neck. I decided to message him. "Hey, I'm here. The house looks empty." No response. After a few minutes of sitting there like an idiot, I figured I'd knock on the door. Maybe he didn't see my message. Grabbing my phone and wallet, I stepped out of the car. The neighborhood was eerily silent. As I approached the house, the smell of mildew and decay hit me. I wrinkled my nose, looking around. The street was deserted. No cars in driveways, no kids playing, not even the soft buzz of distant traffic reached this place. When I reached the front porch, I hesitated. The plywood over the windows had gaps wide enough to see the darkness inside. I knocked on the door. No answer. I knocked again, harder this time. "Hello, Tommy?" Still nothing. I was about to turn back when I heard shuffling, faint but distinct, coming from the side of the house. My heart started beating faster, but I tried to brush it off. Maybe Tommy was working on something out back and didn't hear me. "Tommy?" I called out, stepping off the porch. As I rounded the corner, I stopped dead in my tracks. Two men were standing there, just a few feet away. One was tall and wiry, wearing a hoodie pulled low over his face. The other was shorter but stocky, his arms crossed over a stained t-shirt. Neither of them looked like the smiling guy in Tommy's profile picture. "Hey," I said cautiously, "I'm here about the TV." The taller guy smirked, looking at his friend. "Yeah, the TV. It's inside. Come on." Something about his tone unsettled me deep down. It wasn't friendly. It was mocking. "I'll wait out here," I said, taking a small step back. The shorter guy stepped forward, blocking my path. "Nah, man. You gotta come in to see it. It's a good deal, right?" Alarm bells were screaming in my head now. My eyes darted around, searching for an escape route. "I think I'll pass," I said, trying to keep my voice steady. "Sorry for wasting your time." Before I could move, the tall guy grabbed my arm. "You're already here," he said, his grip tightening. I was hit with a sudden rush of panic. I yanked my arm free and bolted back toward my car. I heard them shout behind me. "Get him," one of them yelled. I threw myself into the driver's seat, slamming the door shut just as the taller guy reached for the handle. Without thinking, I jammed the car into gear and floored it, the tires screeching as I sped down the street. In my rearview mirror, I saw them standing in the middle of the road, watching me. Once I was a safe distance away, I pulled over and called the police. My hands were shaking so badly I could barely dial. The dispatcher listened calmly as I explained what had happened and promised to send an officer to the address. By the time I got home, my nerves were shot. I kept replaying the encounter in my head. A few days later, the police called me back. They'd gone to the house, but didn't find anyone there. The place was indeed abandoned, and there was no sign of a Tommy. They suspected the men were using fake profiles to lure people to isolated locations. The truth hit me hard. They'd probably done this before, and who knows how many people hadn't been as lucky as I was. Now, whenever I use Facebook Marketplace, I insist on meeting in public places during the day. No deals are worth risking your life for. If these Facebook Marketplace nightmares had you double-checking your own safety measures, hit that like button and subscribe for more real-life scares. What would you do if you found yourself in one of these situations? Let's talk about it in the comments. I'd love to hear your strategies. Share this video with your friends and remind them to stay cautious while buying and selling online. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next nightmare.
NASCAR on Prime lights up Music City. Who's got what it takes to tackle the concrete at Nashville Super Speedway and walk away with NASCAR's coolest trophy? Stream the NASCAR Cup Series at Nashville, Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, where music meets motorsports, only on Prime.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.